Yours is a terrible story, Victoria. Terrible. Yet in some ways wonderful. Particularly if it has led you to think about the religious life.
I cannot think of any other sort of life, Reverend Mother.
You say that now. You may not always want the cloister.
I want it with all my heart.
Perhaps Julian Sanchez was not altogether to blame. I have always known him to be an honorable man.
I don't know what to believe. War coarsens people. I don't even know what I wish to believe.
The sisters and I will pray for you, for Julian, and for the soul of your husband, Jacinto.
Oh, thank you, Madre. You have been a mother to Juanita and me in more senses than one.
It was my promise to your own dear mother, who was my best friend. But now I have a pleasant surprise for you. You know some of our sisters were violated after the siege by British troops.
I heard. It was the one thing everybody dreaded.
Well, one of them in particular received a special dispensation from the bishop to return home for a while. Now she is back with us. Come in.
Victoria, dearest Victoria.
Rosario. Oh, the little baby. How sweet. Oh, look, he's got blue eyes and fair hair.
Hardly surprising under the circumstances.
Oh, look, he's smiling.
It's probably only wind. So, Sister Rosario, the good news is that when I have had a word with His Grace the Bishop, and I don't anticipate any problem, Victoria will start her novitiate here with us.
Oh, Victoria, that's wonderful news.
A year should give her time enough to decide whether she wants to become a nun or not.
Oh,
meanwhile, perhaps she could help you with the baby.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Mother. And what news of little Juanita, Victoria?
Oh, only good news. And just imagine, she's become a great favorite with Milord Wellington.
To the Right Honorable the Lord Bathurst, Whitehall, my lord. Following upon our decisive victory at Vitoria, our right flank has pursued the enemy into the Pyrenees, where the latter are continuing to fight a stiff rearguard action. On our left, after a hard fight, San Sebastian has fallen to our forces, and I'm happy to inform your lordship that our leading troops have finally crossed the border into French territory.
You ready for your shaving, Walter Millard?
Oh, yes. Put it down, won't you?
Very good, Millard. There's your razor as well, sir.
Thank you. Have I any official functions today, Alex?
The prefecture, sir?
Oh, my God, so I have. Yeah, Alex?
Sir?
I cannot remember whether you did or did not claim the acquaintance in London of a certain Miss Harriet Wilson.
Most certainly not, my lord.
Oh, well, then you won't be interested.
It's my job to be interested, sir.
I recently received a rather curious letter from that young lady. It's over there on my desk.
You want me to read it, sir?
Just have a look at the second page.
You will, I rather fancy...
Be surprised when I tell your lordship that I'm about to become an author. You are surprised? Of course, but you must believe me. Under the auspices of the well-known bookseller, Mr. Stockdale, I'm about to publish my delectable memoirs. Moreover, I'm informed that the whole of London is trembling with expectancy at the event. Ain't it droll that little Harriet Wilson should cause such a stir? But what fun! All the nobility and gentry, that is, those who are not with your lordship in the peninsula, have been battering down my front door in an endeavour to find out whether their names are mentioned in my little book.
Would you call it blackmail, my lord?
I certainly would.
And what will you reply?
Alex, Napoleon has retreated from Moscow, and we have won a great victory over the French in Spain. Is the world going to convulse still further at the publication of the memoirs of Miss Harriet Wilson?
I hardly think so, sir.
Right. I shall say publish and be damned.
Good for you, sir.
What's all that din going on out there? Go and see, will you, Alex?
Forgive the lack of ceremony, my lord, but I have extraordinary news for you.
Yeah, Freddy, I've long expected it. We have peace, have we not?
I don't know about that, my lord, but Napoleon's abdicated.
Abdicated? There, you made me cut myself. Abdicated, you say?
Yes, sir.
Upon mine honor. Hurrah!
With the Battle of Toulouse in April 1814, the war effectively ended, and the Spanish and Portuguese forces with their camp followers returned to their homeland. Likewise, the British troops made their way to Bordeaux to embark for England. Now, what went on in Lord Wellington's mind with peace having been declared? Could he possibly have contemplated a life by the fireside with Kitty? Unlikely. My friend Harry Smith had no plans beyond introducing his Spanish bride to his family in Cambridgeshire. However, their home leave was not to be of long duration. In March 1815, that old fox Napoleon, actually he was still only 45, escaped from Elba and raised his standard in the south of France. His old troops rallied to him, and by June of that year, he was in Belgium, confronting a scratch international army commanded by General Wellington, now elevated to a dukedom. Supporting the Duke was a Prussian force under General von Blücher. The Smiths were once again on active service, Harry having been posted as brigade major to General Sir John Lambert, commanding 6th Division. And, of course, that old campaigner Juanita, now at least 16, wasn't going to be left behind.
Enrique, why do I have to go back to Antwerp?
Because it has been decreed that that is where the baggage has to go. And you're a baggage.
Very funny. But why can't I come as far as divisional headquarters?
Because there's almost certainly going to be a big battle. And if the Duke catches you in the front line again, he'll never ask you to any more of his balls, picnics or parties, ever.
I'm not going to ask you to dance, Juanita, because I may have to leave soon, but take my arm and let us circulate.
With pleasure, Your Grace.
Now, who do you know here?
There seem to be many people from England I don't know.
Oh, they're the Richmond's fashionable friends. The Duke and Duchess have made Brussels all the rage this year.
And are those what you call English roses, sitting there all in a row?
Yes, and I'm making them all fearfully jealous by promenading with you.
Oh, how lovely.
Ah, Napier. You know my little guerrillera from Badajoz, don't you?
Indeed I do, Your Grace. Good evening, Juanita.
Good evening, Major Napier.
Oh, look, there's Slender Billy. Prince William of Orange. Used to be one of my ADCs in the peninsula. Commands all the Belgian and Dutch forces now.
Wasn't he engaged to be married to your Princess Charlotte?
Turned him down, poor fellow. Just didn't fancy him. Can't really say I blame her.
Harry?
Hello, Alex, old boy. Yeah, take a glass of wine with me.
No, thanks. Listen, all military personnel are to return to their units, but not all at once and not obviously, if you know what I mean. Bony spies could be in this ballroom.
Right. Where's the commander-in-chief?
Looking at maps in the library. He's going to stay to the last moment so as not to give the game away.
I follow.
Pass the word round discreetly, like a good fellow.
I was just beginning to enjoy the party, damn it. I hate balls. Always end up drinking too much. It's all Benita's fault. Can't get her away from the dance floor. She's getting spoiled, the baggage. If the Duke called her his little guerrillera once, he did it a dozen times. Oh. Now the bloody rain's got to my saddle. Damn it!
Harry Smith was present at the Battle of Quatre Bras, when von Blücher's Prussians got a trouncing, but not an outright defeat. That was on the 17th of June, 1815. Rather late the following morning, Sunday the 18th, the rain cleared away, leaving the cold, hungry, and sodden armies facing each other with little stomach for a fight. It was, nevertheless, the morning of what we now call the Battle of Waterloo. Harry was dispatched by his divisional commander to make contact with the Duke.
Ah, the party's started. I dare say we shall get every delicacy of the season today. Hello? There's old Scavell, the quartermaster general. Having trouble with his horse, by the looks of it.
You there, sir! You in the rifles! Oh, confound the bloody animal!
You'll find the bank less steep just here, sir.
Thank you. Come up, you bloody animal! Confound you!
Is the baggage clear back there, can you tell me?
No, sir, I'm afraid not. They're pretty well blocking the Ohain Road.
Confound it! The Duke will make a meal of me if he can't get his reserves up.
Where is the Duke, sir?
Hougoumont. Those farm buildings, you can just see them on the skyline.
Hougoumont's taking a pounding. That it always looks worse from a distance. Guards brigade there? Trust old Nosey to be at the sharpest end. It's his first battle face to face with Boney. Boney and Nosey. Nosey and Boney. I wonder if they're both aware of it. There go Picton's Highlanders, moving into position. First 95th should be there somewhere. Probably in or near Le Haye Sainte. That should be the Charleroi Road. Yes, it is. My God, the mud! Hope old chap doesn't cast a shoe. That looks like Alex Gordon. They're good.
Hello, Harry. What brings you here?
I need a word with your governor.
Go ahead. Harry Smith, Your Grace.
Hello, Smith. Where are you from?
6th Division, General Lambert, Your Grace.
What have you got?
The 4th, 27th in Eskillens, and the 40th with the 81st in reserve.
How are they?
Excellent, Your Grace. Very strong.
Good, good. Now, tell General Lambert I'm putting the Hanoverians, who are new to the game, under his command, and tell him when I give the order, and not before, to bring his division up to the left of General Picton, because, if I'm not mistaken, that's where you're going to be needed. Is that clearly understood?
Yes, quite clear, sir. Oh, God! What was that?
A shell. Very animating.
Indeed.
Do you know La Haye Sainte, where your 1st Battalion is?
I know where it is, sir.
There's a tree on the other side of the road opposite the farm. That's where I shall be.
Look, Honko. There's old Nosey under his tree again. And he's having a deco through his spyglass.
Well, you better be careful, Billy. You might want to know where that cold partridge came from. Here. Pass of him, Blanc.
My word. Drinking on duty, Pongo. You wouldn't want to be losing them stripes again, would you?
Captain Kincaid of the 95th Rifles. Our battalion was in a large sandpit for the object of defending the western flank of an important feature in the centre of our line, the farmhouse and buildings of La Haye Sainte. Boney was a bit late in starting on the morning of the 18th of June, but when he did, I had been in a number of battles in the peninsula, but never had I heard so much noise, nor seen so much shot and shell at any given time as at about 11:30 o'clock when we were near Waterloo.
Major Harry Smith. How the Commander-in-Chief knew so exactly what was to befall us will always remain a mystery. But doubtless that's where greatness lies. Indeed, battle had not been joined more than 2 hours when the Belgian and Dutch troops to the left of Sir Thomas Picton fled in total disarray. Our 6th Division immediately received the order to advance and fill the gap. It was at this time a sergeant and three troopers of Ponsonby's dragoons, covered in mud and blood, galloped past us going to the rear. For a moment, my heart sank. Could it be that our cavalry were also in retreat? But then, as they passed General Lambert, the sergeant raised high a newly captured French eagle, and a great hurrah went up from the Enniskillens.
Captain Hull Gronow of the Foot Guards. I was absent without leave from duty at St. James's Palace, and had, as a result of a bet, managed to attach myself as a supernumerary to General Picton's staff. At about 2 o'clock, Marshal Ney, with his first corps formed in four columns, advanced in echelon. They completely put to flight a Dutch-Belgian brigade and attacked Picton's division. It was then that that noble soldier was killed by a musket ball. Soon afterwards, a senior member of his staff called me over and said, "Gronow, there's nothing for you here. I think you'd better go and join your own regiment, or you may get in a scrape for being absent without leave."
The French threw their full weight on our center, at La Haye Sainte and General Allen's division to the east of it. And there was a moment when I could clearly distinguish Marshal Ney dancing about like a monkey, trying to animate his men. We held them off, but at a terrible cost. Our colonel wounded, likewise our second in command, and many of the subalterns. Of I Company officers, I was the only one left standing up, though my poor horse was separated from one of his ears and had his hide punctured in two places.
The worst damage to our square was done by the massed French artillery. When their heavy cavalry finally attacked, the ground was so sodden that they could scarce move faster than a trot, and being unable to penetrate our wall of bayonets, all they could do was ride around us, brandishing their sabers and shouting abuse. I thought, thank God Juanita is safe and sound in Antwerp.
When my horse, Chiquito, bolted, we were about 6 miles from Brussels on the Antwerp road. It was not Chiquito's fault. I had not gathered him up properly. When two British officers galloped by saying, "The battle is lost. The French are coming." I knew at that moment that Enrique was dead, because he would have been in the thick of the fight. Frightened by the other horses, Chiquito bolted. After many miles, there was a cart overturned on the road. Chiquito reared, but I managed to get hold of the curb rein at last. But I was alone, with no money, no waste, and little idea of where I was.
The charges of the French cavalry were in appearance very formidable. The very earth shook under the enormous weight of men and horses. But in reality, they were a relief, since their artillery could not fire on us.
Come on, lads, come on.
At 4 o'clock, our square was a perfect hospital, being full of the dead, dying, and mutilated.
The battle had been going since about 10 o'clock in the morning. I was with my regiment, the 43rd, at the right of the line. In the late afternoon, I well remember the dread sight of the whole Garde Imperiale in their tall bearskins, advancing en masse in a last attempt to win the day before nightfall. But the foot guards on our left stood firm, despite fearful casualties. Then, John Coben, our colonel, had an inspiration. Moving us at speed, for which we as light infantry had been trained, we outflanked the Garde Imperiale as they engaged with our men and poured such a deadly fire into their exposed flank that all but the bravest broke and ran.
What did it matter what happened to me if my Enrique was dead? But I had to know, to find his body if need be. So I turned Chiquito's head to where I thought the battlefield must be.
It had been hard pounding all day. By early evening, I noticed between two French cavalry charges, the Duke, accompanied by his aide, Colonel Alexander Gordon, enter our square. After sitting calmly for a while on his favorite charger, observing all that was taking place, he turned to Gordon and said, "If the Prussians come soon, the day is mine." Then he added, "What o'clock is it?" Gordon took out his timepiece and was about to reply when a stray bullet knocked him to the ground, from which he was never more to rise.
By the time I left Brussels behind me, I seemed to be the only person going towards the sound of gunfire. Thousands of men, mostly wounded, accompanied by gun carriages, limbers, carts and horses, were all moving slowly towards the city. I stopped by some walking wounded of the 44th Regiment in General Pike's brigade and asked them for news of Brigade Major Smith. I knew what reply to expect. Brigade Major Smith, they said, had been killed at the same time as General Picton.
Some time after 5 o'clock, General Lambert sent me down to the sand pit to extricate the 95th if necessary. I passed by my old 13 platoon where Sergeant Prickett told me their new officer, just out from England, was dead. As were a number of old Peninsula men. And, Prickett added, "Bombproof Palmer's going to do a die on us." "No, he bloody ain't," gasped that poor fellow. It was evidently his last breath.
The light was beginning to go when we saw the Duke, quite by himself, Gordon was dying and Fitzroy had lost an arm, coming down the line. He raised his hat and said something, which, being now quite deaf from exposure to so much noise all day, I could not hear.
He raised his hat and spoke. These were his very words. "Guards, get up and charge!" The battle was over. It was quite dark by the time we bivouacked somewhere in the neighborhood of La Belle Alliance, which had been Boney's headquarters during the day. Sitting by a fire, I was thinking tenderly of Juanita, contenting myself with the thought that, though miles away, she was safe in the hands of West and Jenny Cochran.
I arrived at the battlefield as daylight was fading. I was alone and friendless on a tired horse that had carried me close on 60 miles since dawn that day. Neither of us had had any food, nor had I any money. Now all I could see was a sight so terrible that all hope of finding the body of my darling husband among so many quite vanished from me. In that moment of total despair, I remembered to do one thing I had sinfully failed to do all day. I started to pray. I prayed for help to God, through our Lord Jesus Christ, and to Christ's Holy Mother, who is one with God. I was thus praying when I thought I hear someone calling me.
Juanita? Juanita Smith?
Who is it calls me?
Why, it's William Napier. Don't you remember me?
Yes. Yes, Major Napier.
What in the name of goodness are you doing here?
I was praying for guidance, and you have come to help me. Thanks be to God!
Oh, there now. It'll be a privilege to help you, Juanita. Just tell me what I can do.
Help me to find my Enrique.
Harry? Oh, that shouldn't be too difficult. 6th Division have moved up to La Belle Alliance.
But he is dead.
What?
I asked some men who knew. They told me Brigade Major Smith was dead.
Oh, that would be General Pack's brigade major. Poor Smith, who spells his name with a Y. No, upon my honor, your Harry I've seen less than an hour ago. Not a scratch on him. Come with me.
Harry!
Harry Smith? Anybody seen Major Smith?
Yes, I'm here. Who's that?
William Napier.
Oh, hello, Napier. Come and take a swig of brandy. And who's that with you?
Enrique.
Juanita. What the hell are you doing here?
The last word must go to the hero of the day, who, for some, is still the greatest hero of any day. To the Right Honourable the Lord Bathurst. My Lord, it gives me the greatest satisfaction to assure your lordship that the army never upon any occasion conducted itself better than on the field of Waterloo. Oh, damnation, take it. How can I bring myself to write such cant? Dear Bathurst, together with my official dispatch, I'm writing this personal note to you. Thank God I do not know what it is to lose a battle. But certainly nothing can be more painful than to gain one with the loss of so many friends.
An historical postscript. Harry ended his distinguished career as General Sir Harry Smith, Governor of Cape Colony. But to the young girl he rescued from the siege of Badajoz came even greater fame. Juanita gave her name to a small town in South Africa, which will forever be remembered for another siege, this time in the Boer War, a town called Ladysmith. In The Long Road to Waterloo, the second of two linked plays by Peter Luke, based on his own novel, The Other Side of the Hill, Michael Pennington played Lord Wellington, John Moffat, Major William Napier, Dominic Rickards, Major Harry Smith, Cyril Jenkins, Juanita, Philip Sully, Don Julian Sanchez, June Tobin, Madre Soledad, and David March as Goya. Major Fitzroy Somerset was played by Christopher Good, Captain Alexander Gordon, David Bannerman, Rifleman West, Eric Allen, Sergeant Prickett, Ronald Herdman, Rifleman Doubleday, Clarence Smith, Rifleman Jackman and Captain Freer, Mark Straker, Rifleman Palmer, Neil Roberts, Captain Kincaid, Terence Edmund. Captain Sula, Captain Dan Cardo, and Captain Grono, Alan Barker. General Skerritt and Colonel Ponsonby, Brett Usher. Quartermaster General Scovell and Orellana, Charles Millam. Corporal Costello, Andrew Winkett. Jenny Cochran, Susan Sheridan. General Pakenham and General Vandeleur, Colin McFarlane, Harriet Wilson, Melanie Hudson. Sister Rosario and Fanny, Teresa Stratfield, Victoria, Emma Fielding. The music was composed and conducted by Tom Eastwood and performed by Paul Archibald, Richard Benjafield, Adrian Brett, Charles Dickey, Bill Worrell, and Simon Weinberg. Other Side of the Hill was directed by Glyn Dearman.